You're listening to Boggy Talk, Faith Conversations in the Mud, a resource of Church on Bayshore.
Thanks for joining us today on Boggy Talk. How's y'all's week been?
It's been good. We've spent a lot of time together this week.
Pre-recording.
And we just traveled to and from the Florida Baptist Convention in Orlando. So left right after.
Okay, we went to Disney.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Right. Oh, man.
We stayed at a four-star hotel.
No, our hotel was maybe half a star
in Orlando. Dear.
It was very bad.
Where? Orlando?
In Orlando, okay. Yeah. It was
Fairfield Inn on Vineland Road, if you ever are thinking about staying there.
Don't. Avoid the area.
You know, you realize as you say these things, you're like, yes, these are first world problems. Yes. But I was like, honestly, this is like, even overseas, if you were staying in a place like this, like.
The floor was wet.
The floor was like they had shampooed the carpet. And we think it's because we heard somebody else say they thought there were bugs in their room. We're like, oh, so they probably did treat the whole place for bed bugs.
Which is good.
That's good. But it smelled like if you've ever given your dog a bath and then they immediately just go outside the house and run around and then come back in, except when they come back in, you're actually in a middle school locker room. That's kind of what the room smelled like. It was what it was. But the convention was great.
The convention was great.
Glad to be back.
I slept great when I got home. Okay. That was good.
Four-star convention. Yeah. I slept okay, too.
All right. Well, that's awesome. Well, today we have three different topics that we're going to be going over. We're going to talk a little bit more in depth about the Florida Baptist Convention that you guys were at. And then the David Platt. Little controversy. There was a documentary that came out.
A little controversy.
And then lastly, we have a question about heaven that we're going to get to. So, yeah, to start off, you guys already mentioned that you were at the conference. What were your major takeaways from it?
Well, there's a lot of worship, singing, and a lot of preaching. And in between that, there's some business. I think the Florida Baptist Convention, one of the things I love about it is it is very diverse in age. Like there's older people and younger people.
and us
in the middle.
Yep.
And in ethnicity, nationality, because Florida is a diverse state. And I think the leadership of the Florida Baptist Convention has recognized that and really has made it an emphasis to unify the state in those. Mm-hmm. And so really there are a lot of people from a lot of different backgrounds in terms of, you know, not just first generation or second generation people who've lived in the United States, but some who know they just got here. But they're in leadership in churches that are reaching a lot of different people, and that's amazing.
What generation is that make them if they just got here?
I don't know. I don't think it made sense, but I'm blaming it on the fumes of the room, and I'm still tired.
The fumes of the room. Is it Vinland Road or Vineland Road?
I don't know.
Vineland.
Vineland. Yeah, that's right. And there really wasn't a lot of business, but a lot of great reports from some of the entities, like One More Child, the Baptist University of Florida, making big strides. What would you add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you said a lot of good things. I mean, one thing to note is our church is, involved. Obviously, we're, significant giver to the cooperative program, and half of that stays in our state. And supports, ministry to churches, equipping of churches, church planning, disaster relief, a lot of different things. So, Roger Barrett, one of our church members, served on the nominating committee for 3 years. So
way to go, Roger.
Yeah, those are the people that kind of help put all the people on the different boards. So that's cool. Justin Wyatt is on the board for One More Child.
That's right.
So it's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So Roger didn't nominate you either, right? Weren't you nominated by?
I have no idea.
Well, I mean, I guess he was involved in it.
Yeah, so it's been a while. I mean, this is my second term, so. Yeah.
I was the one that nominated you the first
time ago. That's right.
We weren't at this church. Yeah,
that's right.
And then I'm on the State Board of Missions, so happy to serve in that capacity. Mm-hmm. And it's if you see you're like, why don't I read about Florida Baptist Convention? There's just not drama.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, at the Southern Baptist Convention, there's drama. And at the Florida Baptist Convention, there's not.
Okay.
And, again, reminding everyone who may be new to Boggy Talk, a convention is not like some authority over us. It's basically all these churches volunteer to give and then work together for missions purposes. And so it's the entity that kind of takes all those resources and distributes them and manages them, and you know, in order for our shared and common vision. So we do have a change of executive director. Okay. So by God's grace, I got to be involved in the search process for our new one, which is Stephen Rummage. So he's taken over for beloved Tommy
Yes,
Green.
Tommy. Yeah, they honor Tommy Green, okay. And he did a great job as the leader, and he is beloved, I think, because he's humble. He's a humble leader.
He got a standing ovation that just remained standing.
Aww. Yeah, people like just stayed up till the end of what he said. Yeah, it was good. Yeah.
So
and Lewis Miller was recognized.
He's out.
Literally. They got recognized.
And then he was like, we're out.
And they walk out the door.
Wow.
Yeah, but it was good.
It was still going on.
Lewis has been the regional
catalyst. Is he on the road now already?
Probably so. He's technically working till the end of the month, but he's probably just
his PTO.
His farewell tour.
He's out. He's moving to Virginia today. He's done. Or tomorrow. Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
So there was time to honor him. Yeah. I think it's just a great, there's a lot of things, great things happening in our state. Yeah. I think a lot of it gets highlighted and shared. I mean, from the work that One More Child is doing to the church planting work that's being done, you know, I think that's probably in the panhandle. Maybe we're a little bit removed from some of the things that are just about distance, literally, that are going on.
We're
yeah.
From lots of things.
From reality. I don't know. But things that are going on in the rest of the state, I think specifically the ways that the convention has been intentional in reaching the nations in Florida with church planting specifically. I think that's been a big emphasis, and there's a lot of great support for that.
Something that's really cool is, you know, just relational connection. Mm-hmm. Baptist life ends up being a pretty small world. I would say Christian leadership world ends up being a pretty small world. Yeah. And so, like, you know, hanging out with some friends that I've known, I probably only talked to at that, besides maybe Twitter exchange or something like that. Met two young guys who are students at a college, Christopher and Nathan, and just had a good time, you know, talking to them. I was like, I remember 20 years ago. Like, you know, it's so weird to be on this side of this.
Yeah.
But I think it's cool. Like, we're all kind of in the same-ish, you know. Mm-hmm. We're both much older than you, Kelly.
Much
older than you. Yeah. But I think we're in, like, this cool spot in our life where we're kind of like, we've learned it a little bit now, you know. But also there's these giants ahead of us, you know. They're not giant people. But, you know, of faith who it's like, hey, you know, we're kind of a connection.
Yeah.
Bridge.
Yeah, it's just family aspect of it, too. Yeah. I think even with people you don't get to know, it was very encouraging to be in the same room with, you know, there's a lot of people, but several hundred who are probably in their 60s and 70s who they've just been faithful pastors.
They haven't quit yet.
Yeah, and with no...
We feel like it sometimes.
Yeah, I know. Like, but with no real probably like prominent recognition, and they just... It is a great reminder, and that's really humbling. I think we need that.
That's cool. That sounds encouraging. Well, so James, I know you've been asked by a couple people about the controversy with David Platt. He's the pastor at McLean Church.
It sounds like McLean when people say McLean.
McLean, it does.
Okay, I wasn't quite sure.
It's a Virginia thing.
Okay, and so a documentary came out by prior church members, a few of them, and basically they were. I mean, I guess there was a lawsuit that was attached to what was going on, and so this whole documentary is supposed to be saying the problems that they had with the church, with David's leadership and different things like that. So you can expound on that more, please, and just if you guys have thoughts on what you think about the whole situation.
Yeah, I have been asked by several people what I thought about it. And when they first asked, I was like, nothing, because I haven't watched any of this, and I really don't have time to watch any of this. But then, you know, I was like, okay, these are church members who actually care. They're not. You know, don't have a bad intention. And I had a 6-hour car ride to Tampa, and I was like, all right, I'll listen to this. I mean, to summarize, I think I'm pulling up the Bible, but what you said is right. They had some bad I don't know how many people are total. There's probably like, 15 on the videos, maybe?
Something like that.
In a church of like 15,000. So that's not a lot.
Yeah.
And it's hard to even tell on, like, some of their videos, like, how many people are yelling, you know? Mm-hmm. Is it, like, the same people in each video, too, right?
Yeah.
But basically, there's some people who are upset about the direction of the church. I think the bigger issue that's presented is they're ultimately saying there's lies and there's conspiracy. And I mean, they go as far to say that he's a wolf in sheep's clothing. Yeah. And he's not going.
Pretty,
he's going to hell. Mm-hmm. I mean, so, so before we talk about what we think about it, I mean, any, does that capture what it is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, what were they upset about? You know, there were money, affiliation with SBC, whether or not they were or not, and how, what the partnership was. You know, he, David Platt, just for context, became the pastor there after being a teaching pastor or visiting pastor when he was the president of the IMB. He taught there multiple times, you know, and it got more often. And so he was a successor for a pastor who'd been there for a very long time.
Yes.
So there's a little bit of the context of the situation, a little bit of the background.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, my first thought about this is Proverbs 18:17, which says, the one who states his case first seems right until the other comes and examines him. And, you know, in marriage counseling, when I typically meet with a spouse and I hear their case, I mean, this isn't always the case, actually, but, you know, I'm like, okay, you know, this is how it is.
Yeah.
This is, and then I meet with both of them and I'm like, oh, now that there's back and forth, you know, not that that person was wrong, but okay, I'm seeing this other person's side of the story. So, I mean, that's in God's word. So I think we need to understand that one person seems right until the other comes and examines it. The other comes and pleads their case. I think it's one translation of that. So that's the first thing. Like, you know, you listen to somebody give their emotional, compelling version of something. It might seem right. But you haven't heard both sides of the story or all sides of the story.
And he hasn't really come out with any sort of, not that I could find, rebuttal or whatever.
And really hardly anyone has.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's that. The second thing I would say is, we don't actually know. We weren't there. We're not there.
Yeah.
I think that this is what's hard for people in our culture because people want to know. And they're waiting for this evidence to find out. And it's like, if you weren't there when it happened, there's a good chance you're actually never going to fully know what happened.
Yeah.
And so, like, I have to acknowledge that I'm never going to know fully what happened in that situation. Or, you know, I mean, many situations. We didn't even know fully what happened with JFK shooting assassination. Like, that's a big deal. And people still fully don't know. I've told people in marriage counseling, like, I'm giving you this advice based on your interactions, but I'm not actually at home with you. Like, so I don't actually know what's happening. So I think that takes some humility on our part. And I think we need to chill out in our culture with watching people's YouTube videos and watching people's documentaries and watching people's reading people's posts and thinking we can actually discover the truth.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah, I think a couple of things about it. Like I go to these existential questions. Like, what is it about this kind of stuff that's so attractional to people?
Yeah,
like people really, a lot of people, not all, want, and I think in some level, they want to know. And like, I know that this guy, this man, you know, David, he's got a large platform, seems sincere. And I think there's this level that exists where people are like, I knew it was too good to be true.
Right.
Yeah.
Or like, because of some of the things that he's written and the way that he teaches the Bible, and it's compelling and it's convicting. It's like, okay, good. Now I don't have to give that as much weight. And I think there's, let's be honest, there's a level of that in a lot of people, and really any controversy. And so, like, ultimately, that is a piece of this.
I'm the opposite, though. I'm like, I don't want this to be true.
I'm with you. Like, I'm like, really, like,
not that I'm better than anybody, but I don't understand that spirit.
Right. But I think there's a lot of reasons why.
Maybe
I think
it's Satan.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, I think, like, there's jealousy. There's the camps, the tribalism that happens in Christianity.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know, and right before, or as this was coming out, there was actually a new wave of pushback against him, specifically with the book Radical. And there were a couple of posts. And this is, and that book is, I don't know how old now, at least 10 years.
Yeah.
But it had a lot of effect on people, pretty wide reaching. And there were some people who were just kind of now writing about the aftermath of Radical.
Right,
and they're
right.
saying things like, right. David, and they say that because, like, they know him. David is preaching a poverty gospel. And if you go back and read it, I mean, I read it. It was it had impact on me. It had impact on a lot of people. Mm-hmm. He's not. He's not saying do these
we
things.
We know people on the mission field, and that book played a part in
yeah. the mission field. You know, yeah. and I said, yeah, and I, you know, I know families who did adopt because of that. And like, he's not, he's, and the thing in this is he's, my assessment is he's trying to teach the word. And just like you or who me or whoever's teaching the word, thank like you. You try to give application, but just because you applied it in a specific way and then it didn't go well, don't blame that on the messenger. Like
right,
you, as a teacher, you can't be responsible for how people apply it. And he was like, all these people went out and adopted babies and they're totally ill-equipped. And I'm like, but that's not Dan's fault. And,
you know,
and I think all that to say is this, that's a thread coming into this. And there are these people who are like, we're excited to see this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good point.
And, you know, give it in like to the other things he's talking about, like with, specifically about race and other things that people that there was the camp that's like, don't ever talk about social justice issues. Those aren't gospel issues. Yeah. He were like, yeah, see, and it's just more fuel for their fire, which is really annoying to me.
No, that's good. I think the radical thing might be a good talk at another
yeah,
time.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, because I have a lot of thoughts on what you just said there. But yeah, I think, and you know, this spirit of wanting to know existed in the garden. You know, like, I want to be wise like God. So, like, we are so drawn to finding out secret things. You know, that's why people get into secret codes of the Bible and when Jesus is going to come back. When it's, like, plain that Jesus said, I don't even know. So, like, how in the world do we become so arrogant that we think we can figure it out, right? So, like, because we're arrogant, you know. And so I do think there's some of that. Speaking of, you know, the specific issue that at hand, you know, I think some of it was he came in and he changed a lot. I don't know that it was all him, but a lot of change was happening. And that's hard, you know, and, you know, I really thought about when people were talking about their classes being, you know, re-canceled, their ministries being canceled. Like, we did some of that here, you know, as we sought to realign this church around to do less more effectively, to really focus on, hey, God is growing our church and volunteer needs are higher. And so I think there are people who could say of me, even though it might not even be me, but James killed my ministry. And I, you know, I guess, like, I think the bigger the church, the less there's like a personal connection where you're able to say, hey, this is why we're doing this, you know? And so
and that
I
was
think
a huge church.
Yes.
Yeah,
so it is a huge church.
And it was some major shifts taking place. And they were probably behind the times. I actually knew some people that work there. I know some people that currently go there. Like, they were behind the times probably in some ministry areas. And yet, you know, it's still hard for you to stop doing what you've been doing.
And change is hard, period. And I think especially in churches because there's so many levels at which it's hard because it's hard spiritually, it's hard. And it, I think really it's hard emotionally for people because of the tradition and not just traditionalism, but sentiment. I mean, there's just, there's emotions tied up in all these things. So there's, you have to acknowledge that that's hard. And I think maybe there was, no matter how much a church or people say they want to change, when the change actually starts happening, you find out how much they really want to change. And I think that
we stopped doing – so when I got here, we had Sunday morning children's ministry, Sunday night Awana, Wednesday night RAs and GAs.
And children's choir. Like, it was all –
and children's
a lot of
choir.
Things, yeah.
And it was fine, but Sunday morning was growing so much. So – there was way more volunteer needs for kids. I mean, when I got here, there was like 50 kids.
Wow.
You know, and so we had just finished the children's building. And, you know, now we're 225, 250. So that's five times the number of kids. So the volunteer needs are huge. And they were it was growing pretty quick, you know, just bringing us on staff grew it.
We brought a lot of children.
So we ended up saying we got to get rid of one of these nights. And it was Sunday night. You know, it was the most logical because we need those volunteers to go. And so that therefore got rid of Awana. And there were people who were just deeply emotionally connected to Awana because of the impact it had had.
The real impact, yes.
Yeah, not – and so – and they loved the program. And some of them left.
Yeah.
because of that change. And so I think some of what's happening, what happened to McLean and what was even talked about in the documentary was that.
Yeah. And they mentioned that they even used the word the guard was changing.
Yeah.
You know, the people that wrote it. And I thought, well, yeah. It was one way before, and then all these people are coming in, and depending on personality of the pastor. And I mean, I don't know what David's leadership style is like. Some people come in with more force than others.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a slower change, you know. Mm-hmm. And so what about – so that was going on. You know, you had some just logistics things that were changing. And then they were also upset about the whole Southern Baptist convention situation.
Yeah.
You guys want to speak to that at all?
Yeah. That one is a little, I don't know enough, you know, I can only say what I would assume. So what I believe happened in the beginning, and this is from some secondhand information, is for David to be teaching there, he needed them to partner with the SBC because he worked for the SBC.
Right.
When he first took the role. And I think they already were in some ways. And then I think that this is what I think. I think somewhere along the lines, there was this partnership between NAM and McLean and Virginia Baptist. It wasn't them becoming SBC. They were just working together for mission stuff. Somehow, someone just kind of like made them become a part of the SBC on the books.
Yeah.
But that actually... you have to like join. Mm-hmm. So I think someone just because of the amount of money, just a big church, just somehow like made them a part of the SBC. So I don't think they actually were. So when they're like asking that question about affiliation and he's not, it seems like he's not answering it.
Yeah.
That's a complicated thing to ask.
Right.
Because we're not, you know, for us even, like we have to really explain, like as a part of the SBC, like we are voluntarily cooperating with them. We affirm the Baptist faith and message. We are a part of the SBC. But for them, I think they were like working with them. And so that is an affiliation, right? But they're not a part of the SBC.
Yeah.
So.
And they were really trying to like, in that meeting, like catch him.
Yeah,
at
they
something.
Were.
And I could feel like he was trying to say, like, I want to make sure we're talking about the same terms here.
Right.
And they were like, cooperation. Yeah, yeah. And they were just bashing him for that. Like he was trying to avoid the question.
Because he even said, right, where they say we're in friendly cooperation. Didn't he say that? Didn't he say that phrase?
I think he used
that. Yeah.
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 Yeah. And then, so the last part of it that was difficult was he, in 2021, some of his teachings, sermons, he was talking a lot about race things. In my opinion, I think that was the straw that broke.
That was the straw that broke a lot of pastors' camel's backs. I don't know how to say that right.
It's kind of like
you need,
the death
you need to ask Jimmy
like
Scroggins one. About the, his camel that its back that broke from West Palm Beach. There's a great story about First
Baptist
West Palm
Beach.
Oh, yeah,
in a Christmas production, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So little back that thing up just a little bit. Like COVID was also going on.
Yes.
And so we have to remember that they're in D.C. during COVID.
Long shutdowns.
We were listening to one, the Burke guy, the creator, and he was talking about how attendance had dropped in fall of 2020 to this. Well, I don't know. I went to visit my grandfather in Chicago in November of 2020, and that was the second wave of COVID. And so Chicago was shut down in November of 2020. Yeah. I assure you that if Chicago was shut down, Washington, D.C. Was shut down in 2020.
And we Floridians don't have a great context for that second. I mean, as far as public, you know.
Biden had just come into office. Right? No. He had just been elected.
Yeah.
And it had, like, shut back down.
So things weren't even fully operational at that point. You know, there's social distancing, limited capacity, even more shutdowns, second waves of shutdowns in some areas. Mm-hmm. So
if you remember that, and then you bring in what you said, that the race stuff was tense then.
For sure.
I mean, we've kind of come through, I think, that in some ways. I mean, not the issue that – anyway, but, like, it's not what it was then. And so they're in D.C. And, you know, I do think, like I've said on this, like I do think that, you know, Megan Bashan's book, like I think she makes some valid points and, like, people were being just – kind of pandering, and so they were using rhetoric that they didn't even fully understand.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think if you listen to all they're trying to do and you listen to Platt talk about it, I think they were really trying to minister. And he wasn't compromising gospel truth and scripture.
Yeah, I didn't think so either. Yeah, so
– you listened to the sermon, right?
Yeah.
The sermon?
I did. Well, I think it was the sermon. It was one that was attached to many different, like, long explanations of it. And, I mean, I felt like he was preaching – he preached out of Amos was, you know, the background of it too. And so basically, like, when people are giving their worship to God, but then they're turning around and being completely different to, you know, their fellow man kind of thing.
I've done that in 2020.
Mm-hmm. And so
Summer in the Minors.
That was kind of, you know, he was talking about that. And then he went into, he did go into a lot of the statistics of things. And I think that's where people, like, if they feel like there's any hint of saying, like, CRT or you have to like whisper the word or and he's not even saying that he believes that, but people just are starting to automatically like attach those. Right. Well, if you talk about any racial reconciliation or, you know, anything like that, well, you must believe in CRT.
Right.
And they said that on the documentary that he was becoming that. So, you know, not being there for all of it. And I think he did like a separate class series and things like that. You know, I just it was discouraging to me to see people twist those things, I guess, when it wasn't meant to do that. Yeah. But it was meant to say, like, we need to listen to people's perspectives, I think is his point.
And Mike Kelsey, who's the lead pastor now, you know, his video of him saying he was saying in an argument, he feels like I think he was being very transparent, saying he wants to torch white people in a discussion. And they took just a clip from that. And he still said he shouldn't have said it, you know, like what he said there, he should not have said. And so, you know, he apologized. And so I think like, but the problem becomes when somebody, it's like, you know, again, I keep bringing this back to marriage counseling, like somebody decides something about someone, then everything is seen through that filter and there is no grace and there is no forgiveness. And so like, did David Platt and all those guys handle the race thing perfectly? Did they handle the SBC, whatever that was, perfectly? Did they handle all the change perfectly? I don't think so.
Yeah.
But what concerns me about the people making the video, and we've gone through something like this too, is there becomes a villainization. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, then they must be an evil snake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, no, I just said something that I shouldn't have said, like, and I apologize, you know, or we did. It just, that is what really troubles me about this kind of stuff is like, and I know people who know the Platts, who like are in their small group. I know people who've been babysat their kids. Like, they know them. Like, again, not saying they're perfect. I do think, especially when you're somebody like David Platt, like you can kind of underestimate maybe how
power
hard change is. How, especially in D.C., I'm sure some of those people got some power.
I think you really do have to, because if you are if you're trying to portray this, you eventually reach this point where you do have to villainize. If you feel like you're losing the momentum, then you really have to double down on your direction. And I think I heard that when the guy who's really behind, we listened to an interview with him, and he said, in the interview, he said that David is a far left radical. I was like, really? I know some far left radicals, and he is not even in the same state, like zip code, whatever. You know, like that's
he's
not
in Virginia. Not
yeah,
DC.
Exactly. You know, exactly. But it's like, because you now have created this narrative, and so now you have to double down
everything you can.
And when you think about far left radicals, you're talking, I mean, in my mind, you're talking about, you know, the people who are pro transgenderism and pro like just everything that you would think Christians are not for. And you're saying that's what he is, and I just like, so I would say, like, for those who may be researching this or other, you know, series or, you know, documentaries about other people, pay close attention to the language that is used by the people. And when they start saying villainizing things, you know something could be up. And I'm saying it's a telltale sign. But there's You know, think about Robert Morris and what's going on with the Gateway. The language is pretty consistent across the board mm-hmm. from multiple people about what he's done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's being reported on by legitimate journalists.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when there's not that consistency here.
Yeah.
And I think should be telling.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I think probably part of the reason they're not saying much is if you let people like that talk, mm-hmm. eventually, you know, out of the heart, the mouth speaks. So like in this guy said, you know, as he's talking, yeah, well, we were at the church since 05, but we didn't join until 15. And they started having a problem at 18.
Yeah.
So they were 10 years without membership.
Mm-hmm.
Then 3 years in, they started having a problem. Like,
yeah,
you weren't this long committed member. Like, and again, not, but like that changes how I view what
right,
you hear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, you know, just kind of the anger with which he said he's a radical, you know, it wasn't just,
I laughed when he said like, that. I was like, oh, okay.
You know, and again, we can, I'm preaching to myself. Like, if we are Jesus followers, we should never start thinking we're above people
mm-hmm.
and never start trashing people and always be gentle with people and repent when we're not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It doesn't mean we're not right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean we're not right, but it means we want to treat people right. And I think, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's I think that's great. Applications. Anything else for people whenever they're looking at situations like this?
I mean, don't be quick to judgment, honestly. Yeah. I mean, and not just like judgment and like, oh, what a terrible, like judgment of right or wrong. Like, you know, hear it out, play it out, read up, mm-hmm. research. But also like, don't be obsessed with this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think for us as leaders, it comes back to there's, you know, as much as like in our church and our structure, it does slow us down in some ways.
A lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, it really does. But ultimately, it makes it stronger. Yeah. There's
true.
Levels
yeah.
of accountability.
It does.
And so I appreciate that.
I thought about that when they were in the first part of the series. They were talking about that they didn't know that the church was giving money to the SBC. And I'm thinking, what do you mean? How did – you know, like I just know the processes that
we have. But
they
could have also shared that because we like – we'll say things that we do, and then people are like,
we never knew, we never heard. And it's like, well, we've said it multiple times in multiple ways. And
then
that's the problem with communication now.
Said we had unallocated money, and someone who had an agenda was like, oh, that means that money went here. And it's like, what? It hadn't been spent. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so people do.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, but also like people are going to figure something out. That's why clarity, transparency. That way, when that one person that gets disgruntled begins to say those things, the leadership of the church can be like, actually, no,
right.
to the others. Because that person, there's going to be
they're
those
gone.
People.
Yeah.
I don't have anybody mm-hmm. in mind in this church right now, but those people will exist.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you make a great case with should churches be that big?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just hard to shepherd people.
True.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of this is just kind of how mega churches are. There's just so much that happens that people mm-hmm. have no clue about.
True. And for some people, I think like they might need to look at that and say, especially for this group that left, like it was a preference thing too.
Yeah.
You know, like you needed to be in a smaller church where you wanted to have it just, that's just how it was. And then you just didn't mm-hmm. like all the changes. Yeah, people have to just kind of be honest with themselves about what's really going on in their heart. So, well, changing gears a lot here. we had a question about whenever people die and they're in heaven, what is our relationship with people in heaven?
Yeah.
Like when we're in heaven or our relationship
Both.
To them now?
Both.
Okay, that's fair. Go ahead. You're about to say something. I'm processing.
I was just going to make a joke.
Oh, okay. We'll make a joke. Go ahead.
I don't remember.
Heaven is for
real.
I
thought you were saying heaven's like a fair.
A fair.
Yeah, like a fair.
Is there cotton candy?
Cotton candy. deep fried Twinkies.
Oh, gross. Man.
Or Snickers or whatever they are.
deep fried Oreos stuffed in a Twinkie.
That all doesn't sound good.
No.
We did that one time. Is it real? Like fair food on the Boggy Talk?
Oh, yeah, we did.
Yeah.
We did.
Heaven is real. Yes.
This is
heaven
the
is real.
Good for the clarification.
I think first appeal is to Scripture. There's a lot of things we would like to think are true. And maybe some of them are, mm-hmm. and maybe some
like
of them
unicorns?
Aren't. There could be. I mean, I don't know. But I mean, they're not. Anyway, so heaven doesn't.
Unicorns?
Unicorns. Where did that come from?
I don't know.
We'd like them to be real. Wouldn't you like them to be real?
I mean, it'd be cool if unicorns are real.
Sure.
I mean,
dragons were probably real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Too many cultures like wrote about them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's true.
For them not to be real, right?
Yeah. Could be.
Like the flood. Maybe. Too many cultures wrote about it for it not to be real.
Yeah.
Like the Bible's true.
Like the Bible is true. I mean, I think heaven doesn't speak a lot about our relationships in heaven. Like mm-hmm. specifically, it does say, you know, Jesus says, like in heaven, they won't be given to marriage.
He's saying they won't be married.
Yeah. Either, so I think that's saying like we won't be married. But I think ultimately if you...
Some of you are like, woo! And I think, some of you are like, no.
Yeah. I mean, because that happens when people are trying to trick Jesus.
But pause there for a second.
Yeah.
Like... There are people who praise God they won't be married in heaven. Mm,
that's so sad. Like,
but yeah. It's also so good that God is all sufficient for those people who have lived their life faithfully to Him
mm-hmm.
with someone who doesn't love them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 So,
yeah,
I mean, you just, the idea that will be like, I would just say, I know it might make people sad mm-hmm. because they get such joy mm-hmm. out of their marriage, but yeah. like, it's just that heaven is that much greater.
Right.
That
yeah.
much satisfying. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And I think you have to go, like, you have to remember that the whole big picture story of the Bible.
Yeah.
And, you know, why did God create marriage? It's this new image of Christ and His church. And so that in heaven, that image isn't necessarily really needed anymore because church is with
yeah.
bride. Like, mm-hmm. the wedding feast has happened. And I think there's a level of relationship that we, amongst believers, that we can't even comprehend
yeah,
that
right.
is going to exist in heaven, in the new heavens and new earth, because of like the brother-sister relationships
right.
that we will have, that we really can't even fathom what that's going to be like now.
Is that why you call mm-hmm. Christy your sister all the time?
No.
Christy Wyatt.
I don't call Christy my sister. She would look at me like, what?
Sister Christy.
Yeah.
Stop.
She would like, what are you? Why? Stop. So I think that's a picture. Now, I mean, if you want to add anything to that, specifically like in heaven, that's
yeah.
about what we know. I mean, I think there will be some, there'll be some recognition of levels of relationships, but I don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah.
You would think there would be.
Anyone who really like teaches something authoritatively on this is teaching speculation authoritatively,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I don't, because of the parable of the rich man and Lazarus, I think some people have made a conclusion that there are those like that they can see up and see down, but I don't think you can really make that conclusion from
mm-hmm.
that one story. You know, in Revelation 6-7, one of those two chapters, it talks about like them like asking God to bring vengeance on
yeah.
the world. But that doesn't necessarily mean they see
like
what's happening.
Yeah.
It just means they've experienced it. So, you know, I personally don't think people in heaven are looking down on us, because that would not be heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where will they be looking?
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll be looking to Jesus. mm-hmm. And like,
yeah.
So they have to keep looking back and seeing like their spouse cry every night,
mm-hmm.
that they're, you know, or their children.
The grief, the sorrow, the pain,
yeah,
the suffering.
Mm-hmm. There's no more tears. There's none of that in heaven.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and maybe, you know, some people say there's an resting place until there, too. You know, that's another place. I mean, maybe. So doesn't preach well at funerals, but, you know, hey, they're resting until, you know.
It's true.
Right, yeah.
But there's a lot of Orthodox Christians that believe that. So, yeah, I just think ultimately, like, we don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we don't
know
everything on Boggy Talk.
We
sorry.
Don't. It's boggy. That's why it's Boggy Talk. Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, if you have any other questions, feel free to send them my way, kelly@churchonbayshore.org. And thanks for tuning in, guys, and we will see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Boggy Talk. We are so glad you joined in the conversation. Go ahead and subscribe so you don't miss a beat.